For almost 2,000 years, the Catholic Church has pointed the way toward salvation through Jesus Christ. For each of us, that journey starts in darkness, as if in a cave. We invite you now to come with us as we seek wisdom and truth by way of faith and reason with your guides, Mark Tuttle and Timothy O'Donnell. Join us in the Catholic Cave. Welcome once again to the Catholic Cave. I'm Kent Blanford. In the cave with me, Mr. Mark Tuttle, Mr. Timothy O'Donnell. And gentlemen, if I were to ask you a single question, could you answer it in just a few short words?
Nope.
You just did. Question is, what is your vocation?
Oh, that's a great question, yeah.
That is, because there's a lot packed into it. And I think a lot of people have misconceptions about what constitutes a vocation.
Oh, yeah, I agree. I think, so there's been, over time, the definitions kind of broaden and widen out. It used to be, at least in Catholic circles, if you talk about vocations, that always implied and meant exclusively a vocation to the priesthood or religious life.
Right. And now when we talk about vocation, it's usually within the context of education. You know, we need to get more vocational training our high schools. and it's almost become, you know, I don't not maybe not a bad word, but a word that connotates, well, we need to create training and opportunities for people that aren't going to go to college, that, you know, might not be as well educated as everybody else. Those are the ones that are on the vocational track.
Yes. And then there might even be a third.
Which is sad, because I want my electrician to be as smart and as educated as he could possibly be, so my house doesn't burn down.
Oh, yeah. And not only that, when you look at career opportunities now, you know, those traditional vocations of electricians, construction, you know,
plumber.
Those types of things, plumber, those are good careers now.
And
because of the lack of people going into them.
A little supply and demand.
Exactly. Yeah. So, you know, people can make some good money going and going through an apprenticeship, becoming an electrician, and you know, it's a good career path.
So, Tim, what's your vocation?
You know, that is a great question. My vocation has been, you know, to the single life. That's really been my vocation as a Catholic. So that may change at some point. But I've had different vocations along the way, or just tried to discern. There was a period in my life more than 10 years ago where I discerned a vocation to the priesthood and actually went to a religious community, a men's religious community. They go by, short name is the Marians or Marian Fathers, but it was the Congregation of Marians of the Immaculate Conception of the Most Blessed Virgin Mary, of which some of the priests that our listeners may know are Father Don Calloway, Father Chris Alar, and Father Michael Gately. So when I was with their community in formation as a postulant, Father Gately wasn't father yet. He hadn't been ordained, and he had just transferred from another religious community over to the Marians. And I forget which one. I think he was with the Society of Mary, something like that. But then he had joined. So I'd met him. That's before he wrote his books and things like that. So, and then Father Don Cal. So I lived in Steubenville, went to Franciscan University, and Father Calloway was vocation director, but he was also the superior. And we had these two big houses next to each other. I think they're building out. They've been blessed with quite a few vocations, and they're very Orthodox. And I think that's a trend that we see, that if the religious communities are Orthodox, or if the diocese is bishop is Orthodox, you tend to see vocations.
Yeah. You know, I think when you look at the religious orders, we're starting to see little green shoots of growth. You know, when you cut down a tree, you know, a lot of times you've got the stump left and you know, the tree's dead, right? It's been cut down, but then you see those little shoots start to grow up out of the old stump as the tree comes back.
You've been to my house.
And I think in some ways, you know, with religious life in the United States, that very well may be what we're seeing. We're seeing little green shoots here. And they do tend to be in the more Orthodox communities, not only among men, but among women. You know, the Nashville Dominicans are thriving and kind of bursting at the seams. Sisters of Life, another order that seems to be growing and showing new growth. And you know, meanwhile, you know, we went through... And maybe we're coming out of it, maybe we're not. I think you could probably take the numbers and argue on either side of this as to whether we're coming out of it or not. But you know, we went through a devastating period of just a complete drop off of people discerning vocations to the religious life. And the priesthood as well. You know, there's a cottage industry in articles about the priest shortage and you know, how we're going to deal with it, what it's going to look like when we have, you know, so many fewer priests than we do right now. And, you know, like I said, I think you can sort of look at the numbers and different people can see different things. It may be a glass half empty, glass half full thing, but I do see signs of new life within, at least within religious life, coming back.
Yeah, it's not monolithic. It varies a lot from diocese to diocese and different parts of the country, and where you have, again, some of these religious communities are really flourishing. Many are not. Many have really, I think we were talking, right, kind of doing some show prep, Mark, and you shared some numbers from an article where, what was it, women's religious in the United States was like 180,000, like in 1965, somewhere around
right,
that
and
range.
Now it's like 50,000, right?
Of which half are over 90 years old or something.
Right, exactly, yeah. Know? Although once again, the article was pointing out those are slightly old numbers, and those are beginning to reverse. And, you know, the number of young women that are discerning religious life
is on a big upswing.
It is. And women, and, you know, I think discerning religious life, of course, that's only one vocation. I noticed, Kent, you didn't ask me what my vocation is.
And we didn't ask you yours.
Well, because I haven't had a chance to get it in here yet.
I see.
I thought you were trying to distract me from that. So now I'm going to ask, Mark, what's your vocation?
I have 5 kids. So
there you go.
Fatherhood.
I'm pretty obviously called to the married life and fatherhood, and very happily so, you know. And I did go through a period of discerning whether I might have a call to the priesthood. It didn't last a long time, but I do think it's something that every young man needs to go through and really sit down and discern whether they're called to married life, whether they're called to religious life, or whether they're called to the priesthood. You know, ultimately that's the...
Or single life.
Yeah. Right. I mean, ultimately that's the root of the word vocation.
Yeah.
Vocare, what you're called to, what God is calling you to. Mm-hmm. And you need to spend some time in prayer trying to discern that, which is a very countercultural notion. You know, I don't know that people think too much of going into their adult life with their life course determined by what God is calling them to, you know.
Right.
I think they look at, you know, they take the Myers-Briggs, you know, assessment. They look at their
and they're done that.
Yeah, you know, they take, you know, they take any type of vocational
or a career test.
Exactly. Yeah. You know, the Armed Services Vocational Aptitude Battery, the ASFAB. That's one of my favorite ones.
Oh yeah, I've taken that.
But you know, they take any number of tests to determine what their skills are, what they like, what they enjoy, and that becomes their vocational track. And you know, as Catholics, our understanding of vocation is very different. You know, it's not we who choose our vocation. Our vocation, to a great degree, chooses us.
Right. Yeah. Well, I think we understand that you know, God creates all of His creatures are created with a purpose in mind. And part of what a Catholic will do, and it's not just limited to Catholics, but is to discern, you know, the purpose God has for us. But there is a certain there definitely is a recognition and a need to cooperate with our internal desires, because God also places the desire within us. That's one way you begin to find out you feel called, right? Meaning you feel like you're being drawn to something, you're being desire something. But I would add that support what you said, Mark, that every young man and woman really should take time, you know, to discern whether or not a vocation, the religious life or priesthood, is what they're being called to.
You know, and Mark, you were talking about, you know, being a father, being a parent. I was in Mass several weeks ago, and our priest, our pastor, was talking during his homily about vocations. And he was walking up and down the aisle, and he was looking at some of the young men. And, you know, I honestly, I cringed when I saw this, because he looked at one young man and kind of made eye contact with him. And the young man had this big smile on his face, like, yeah, I understand what you're talking about. And the young man's mother reached over and tapped him on the leg and goes, no, you don't want to do that.
Ooh.
And it's like, oh, dear God, we're sitting at church and you're telling this boy not to consider the priesthood. It's a matter of, I know, you know, mama wants to be grandma. But you know what? Being the mother of a priest, that's got to come with a certain honor above, you know, what normal motherhood might be.
Yeah, and I think that story illustrates how all of these vocations to a certain extent fit together. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the church is organic. And just like any organic entity, a sickness in one part of it is going to affect all the rest of the parts of it. And so I think, you know, it, as I was saying earlier, we've gone through, in some ways, a long, dark tea time of the soul, to rip off the title of one of my favorite books.
Yeah.
but we've gone after, you know, kind of a long, dark period in vocations across the board in this country. Mm-hmm. You know, vocations of married life have gone through a horrendous time with divorce, with
cohabitation,
the whole nine yards. Vocations to the single life have become mm-hmm. distorted. Obviously, oh, yeah. We were just talking about the numbers of people called to the religious life plummeting. The numbers of people that entered the religious life and later left, that created a huge crisis probably yes. about 30 years ago. And the priesthood, you know, the lack of men being called to the priesthood, the number of priests that are leaving the priesthood or have left the priesthood. Once again, those mm-hmm. numbers, at least in the past decades, have been cataclysmic, and all of it builds on each other. You know, you were talking about this this mom that was discouraging her son from wanting to become a priest. Well, when you're a family and you've limited your family artificially to only one child, and I know there's a lot of people that's what they're called. They're called to have one child and all of that. Mm-hmm. But I think a lot of people artificially limit their children. Mm-hmm. And so if you limited your family to one child, yeah, you don't want that child to become a priest. Meanwhile, if you do have a family of four, five, six kids, having one of them become a priest is a great joy. So, you know, I think, you know, those sicknesses within one vocation tends to hurt the other vocation. So we're coming up to a break. And when we come back from the break, Tim, why don't we start to dissect a little bit about what the nature of these vocations are? Because each of these vocations seems to have a different nature, a different characteristic, and a different set of charisms about them.
And we'll be back with more of the Catholic Cave, looking at vocations right after this.
You're listening to Catholic Radio Indy, converting the culture to Christ through radio, featuring 100% Catholic programming 24/7. Do your friends a favor. Tell them about Catholic Radio Indy.
This year's Catholic Radio Indy annual dinner is actually a celebration of our 15th birthday. It's going to be on Tuesday, August 27th at the Northside Events and Social Club. We'll have a great silent auction, a really fun live auction, some great food, and Father Douglas Hunter is our guest speaker. Attending our dinner is a great way to support this station while you have some fun and meet the Catholic Radio staff. Tickets are available online now at CatholicRadioIndy.org or at 317-870-8400.
Welcome back to the Catholic Cave. I'm Mark Tuttle, here with Timothy O'Donnell, Kent Blandford, and we're talking about vocations. And here in the Catholic Cave, we try to follow, I think, the Catholic philosophical tradition when we're looking at some of the questions that come up. They don't only come up just in the modern era. These are questions that come up perennially. But this one is one that we want to take a look at through kind of a modern lens to a certain extent. But we do want to apply, I think, some of the skills, some of the rudiments of Catholic philosophy. So when you look at Thomistic philosophy and the way someone that claims to be a Thomist would address a problem, one of the first things that St. Thomas did was he kind of wrestled with the idea of the scope of the definition of something he was looking at. So, you know, when you open up the Summa and you start to read the Summa, on any given point, those first couple of questions are, what is it that we can talk about when we use this term? Mm. And so, you know, in the first segment, we were talking about vocations. Yeah, it gets thrown around a lot. It can be your calling to a particular type of life, like we talk about within the Catholic Church. But it can also be, you know, your job, what you're trained to do, how you give back to the world. Your vocation can not necessarily be just your job, but it could be your skill set. Mm. So is it proper to restrict vocation just to that, I guess, calling in life, whether you're called to the married life, the clergy, the religious life, or the single life? Or is it more proper to talk about vocation a little bit more broadly than that?
Yeah, I'm glad you bring that up. I kind of think I picture in my mind, you know, you look a word up in the dictionary and there's usually multiple definitions because words can get used multiple different ways. So I think in the most commonly today in our setting, vocation really applies more broadly. That's at least within Catholic circles. That mean like your state in life or what you feel like your state in life you're being called or led to. But it's not limited to that.
Right. And I guess then that, you know, if that truly is your kind of calling in life, is this a one-time only calling? I mean, you were talking about, you know, you're called to the single life right now, but, you know, that might change. You know, right. You might be called. Does that mean that you're still discerning your vocation, or is it you've discerned one vocation and God's going to call you to another one and you're going to actually go through life with two vocations? You know, one of my favorite examples of that is Saint Elizabeth Ann Seton. There we go.
Oh, okay.
So
yeah.
Stumbling on her name there for a
okay,
minute.
Okay, sure.
But, you know, Saint Elizabeth Ann Seton, she was called to the married life, but then her husband died.
Right.
And so then after that, she lived the life of a single woman, a consecrated, dedicated single woman as a mm-hmm. teacher for a long time. And started founding schools, etc. And through her vocation to the single life, founding schools as a teacher, she eventually found a calling to found a religious order.
Right.
And so she found a calling to religious life. So she actually had three vocations, three of the four. And since she was a woman, mm-hmm. the one she couldn't have was priestly life. So she actually had all the possible vocations that she could have
yes.
throughout her life. So, you know, did she really have three vocations? You know, what's kind of going on there with her sort of a vocational track?
That's a great question. I would say it would depend on which vocation you're talking about. And I think people can have multiple vocations based on kind of where they are in life, what God is calling them to do next. Where I would draw the line is you wouldn't have concurrent, competing or contradictory vocations at the same time. In other words, I wouldn't be called to say the consecrated life and married life. Usually you wouldn't have those two things at the same time.
Right.
Now it is possible, and there's lots of, that's a great example with St. Elizabeth Ann Seton, but I know firsthand of several examples of men who are priests now who either were married previously, widowed, and then entered into the priesthood, or I also have a friend I went to grad school with who was a Protestant minister, married, five kids, Father George Sanders, and then he got special dispensation from the Vatican to go through Catholic seminary and actually is ordained. So he's actually, yeah, so he's a Catholic priest married with five kids out of near Little Rock, Arkansas.
Right. And, you know, I mean, that brings up another, you know, important Thomistic principle, and that's called contingency.
Oh,
you know,
yeah.
That
good point.
You know, so, you know, I mean, you know, in theory, all young lambs are destined to become sheep, right? I mean, mm-hmm. that's kind of what they're made to do. That's what their potency is to grow up to be full-fledged sheep.
To actually become one.
To actually become one. But
right.
If a wolf comes along, that doesn't necessarily mean that sheep didn't have the potential to become a
sure.
full-grown sheep. It's just so much worse for the sheep that he never made it.
Yeah,
so,
he got eaten. Right.
So contingency enters in and alters, you know, the way things are, even though you've got potentials and kind of what things are sort of put in motion to become,
right.
Contingency comes in and distorts that, changes that, alters that, cuts that short, et cetera.
Right.
And I think a lot of times with people's vocations, that contingency of life comes into play. And so, you know, you may be called to a particular life. And then honestly, the contingencies of the world come into play and things change. Things get altered.
A lot of it depends on your state in life and where you stand. I know for years, I didn't get married until I was 47. And for years, my brother, who was teaching catechism classes and those types of things, always used me as an example of someone called to the single life. And then I got married, and he looked me square in the eye and said, you know, I have to rewrite my lesson plans now.
Right.
But it's a matter of, you know, at that point in my life, it was time for change. And I was suddenly called to become a husband, and because my wife already had children, a father. And you want to talk about a sudden shift. I mean, you know,
you went all in.
in with both feet over my head. And you know what? I've been swimming since, and I kind of like the waters. So, you know, it's a matter of different stages of life. You're called to different things.
Right. And, you know, that brings up, let's dive in. We we promised that we were going to start to dissect these a little bit and look at them. And so let's start with the consecrated single life. You know, I think, obviously, everybody finds themselves in a period of being single.
Born into it.
you're born into it, and when you're a young adult, you're usually an adult who is single.
Right.
But just because you're single does not mean you're called to the single life, necessarily.
Correct.
So, you know, there's a time where you are discerning your vocation, where, to a certain extent, you're a blank slate, and because of that, you are neither married, nor a priest, nor religious, and nor are you called to consecrated single life. So let's start talking a little bit. What's the difference between just simply being single and being called to the single life as a vocation?
I would think the difference would be if you're if you're sort of consecrated to the single life, you've made a determination. That's the state of life for the foreseeable future, on how God is calling you to live in this world. So you have a settled disposition to live that way, versus just being single. I would make it akin to, for a young person, like in high school. What are some things you're doing? You're discerning about your future, including like, should I continue with education by going on to college? Should I continue education by going to, say, a vocational school, like a trade school? Should I go into the military? Maybe I just want to enter the workforce. Maybe I dedicate myself to ministry or mission. And so you're discerning all that. And part of that, it's part of that, your vocation is part of the broader raising and trying to find answers to these questions about how can I find God's plan or purpose in my life. And part of that's going to be through this discernment process.
Yeah, this is where it's important to get back to the root word of vocare. You know, this is what you are called to. And so that's not the state of life you find yourself in. You know, it's the state of life that you've been called to by God.
And you've recognized that, and you've made a decision, right? It's kind of an act of the will to say, hey, this is what I'm now committed to.
Exactly. You're doing this as an act of obedience. Mm-hmm. You're living out your life that God has called you to as an act of obedience. And, you know, being called to that single life in a lot of ways is being called to a love of humanity and a love of the world. Not in the bad sense that Paul talks about love of the world, but a love of the world in that your vocation is one of service to humanity in general. As a single person, you know, somebody that's what you've discerned, your job primarily is to serve those around you in brotherly love by offering yourself as a living sacrifice to whomever and whenever and however you can find it. Some of the great stories of people called the single life are, you know, people I know that You know, they've discerned they're called the single life. And so they live in some ways as a perpetual nanny, a perpetual aunt, not only to their own family, but to whomever needs that kind of help. Because trust me, you know, people that are called to the married life are constantly in need of other adults out there that can offer help, can offer assistance, not only just watching the kids, but in helping to raise the kids and being a mentor and being somebody the kids can look up to as somebody outside the family that's a Christian witness and an example of what it is to be a Christian in the world. You know, that's kind of what I see that vocation to the single life of being, as somebody that has offered themselves, not to any specific person, but to love of everybody.
Yeah, that's a great point. And figuring out what that exactly looks like is really important. Because when you're a single adult, as compared to say someone who's in married life and raising children, you have more time and availability. And so the question really becomes, what are you doing with it? And how are you putting it at the service of others?
Right. And that service to others isn't necessarily, you know, outside the church. I mean, I think a lot of people that feel that calling to the single life find themselves serving their parish in a wide variety of different ways, you know, whether it's in religious education, whether it's in ministry in numerous other ways, music ministry, etc. They find themselves finding a kind of a unique role serving the church in a way that somebody who's married just doesn't have time. Yeah, you know, they don't have the time and ability to dedicate themselves to that.
And with that, we're going to take a break. We'll be back with more on the Catholic Cave talking about vocations this week. You're listening to Catholic Radio Indy.
You can hear the Holy Mass every day at 8 a.m. right here on Catholic Radio Indy.
You know us as Catholic Radio Indy, but we're so much more than just radio. We're a ministry reaching out to Central Indiana and beyond. We have information available about what's happening in parishes here in the Hoosier Heartland, as well as access to the latest from Rome, plus apologetics and authentic Catholic teaching. We are your source for 100% Catholic programming 24/7. Catholic Radio Indy and CatholicRadioIndy.org.
Welcome back to the Catholic Cave. I'm Timothy O'Donnell. In the cave today is Kent Blanford, Mark Tuttle, and we've been talking about vocations. Let me throw this out there to you, Mark. Let's talk a little bit about the vocation to family life. And so you're a husband, father of five. How did you, if we go back in time a little bit, how did you determine that that was your vocation?
Well, you know, I came to the faith to a certain extent a little bit. Well, I was raised Protestant, so I had a conversion experience while I was in college. And so I think my vocation story is tied up with my conversion story to a great extent.
Yeah.
When I was in college, I started dating my wife. We dated for, you know, 3 years in college, so we had kind of a long courtship,
if you would say.
Yeah. And in a lot of ways, we kind of converted together. She was raised Lutheran, I was raised Methodist. And through work in the pro-life community, we started coming in contact with more and more Catholics. You know,
those kooky pro-life Catholics.
Well, I'll tell you one of the funny stories of that. You know, we were praying out in front of the abortion facility, and when you're out there and you're praying with a group prayer, naturally as a Catholic, you're going to want to pray the rosary. Well,
oh yeah.
As a Protestant, you don't want to be praying to Mary. So,
so that has been known to be a stumbling block.
So, and to be able to pray as a group, we came up with a compromise, and we would pray the Chaplet of Divine Mercy, because the Chaplet of Divine Mercy doesn't
Christocentric.
It doesn't mention saints. It doesn't mention Mary. It's Christocentric, as you pointed out. Unbeknownst to me and my wife, however, it's also a powerful prayer for conversion. You know, that's what it's calling for. That's what John Paul II recommended it for.
Oh,
is a call for conversion of the whole world. So these sneaky Catholics that I was around,
old Saint Faustina,
convinced us to pray for our own conversion.
A covert conversion.
Yeah, buddy, I love it.
But anyway, in the meantime, I was also very much drawn to Eastern Orthodoxy, particularly Russian Orthodoxy.
Yeah.
And so I had a long process of wrestling between what the definition of the true church was. I mean, mm-hmm. what you know, is the church just the Roman Catholic Church, or is it the more extended definition of the church of all of the original churches? You know, about mm-hmm. that same time, Pope John Paul II came up with his encyclical Light of the Orient, where mm-hmm. he started to address some of these questions. And so right. I, you know, kind of dove into that. And I had to wrestle with that for a long time. But in that process of wrestling with Eastern Orthodoxy versus Roman Catholicism, I was also wrestling with getting married or, you know, holding out. You know, it was pretty inevitable, I think, at some mm-hmm. point along in that journey that I was going to become one or the other. I was going to become Eastern Orthodox or I was going to become Catholic.
Right.
So I do remember very consciously going out. I did a lot of my prayer at the time, I think like a lot of young men, mm-hmm. very late at night on long walks mm-hmm. out, out into the countryside, etc. And so I remember taking a couple of long prayer walks, very deliberately discerning, Should I become married? Should I propose, or should I hold myself out to become a priest? And eventually discerned. No, I wanted married life. I wanted mm-hmm. And that's what God was calling me to. And 24 years later, and 5 kids later, here I am. So
God bless. What a great story.
Yeah. So anyway, that's my I guess, wrestling with that. But one interesting aspect of that, because I was wrestling with the idea of becoming Eastern Orthodox, part of that involved the idea of being a married priest, because very much so, if I had gone into the route of becoming Eastern Orthodox, that was an option that was very much open. Not all Eastern mm-hmm. Orthodox priests are married, but
most of them are.
Mm-hmm. And, in the Eastern Church, basically, when you become married, you found a calling to serving a parish as a parish priest. If mm-hmm. you stay unmarried, you're following a path to become a bishop to a certain extent. Yeah. So,
and isn't that tied up a lot with monastic life too?
It is. Yeah. Okay. Monastic life as well. But, there the vocations are a little bit more blended. You're not finding one mm-hmm. exclusively over the other one. There are married priests. There are priests who are parts of religious orders. I guess we've got that in Roman Catholicism as well. So there's a little bit more blending of the vocations, where in Roman Catholicism, your vocation is very much your calling for life, and that's kind of, if not exclusive.
You kind of stay in your lane.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, if not your exclusive calling, at least your main calling to a certain extent.
Right.
And, I think that's kind of the nature, that's certainly the nature of married life. When you're called to married life, this is a permanent vocation.
For as long as you're both living.
As long as you're both living, as long as you both shall live, that's the vow you take. So, and even after that, my older brother is recently a widower, and
I'm sorry to hear that.
But he's still very much a father. Uh-huh. He's got 2 children. He's raising his children. That's still very much his vocation. Now, he may be called to be married again. He may be called to religious life. Who knows what the calling is going to become eventually. But mm-hmm. at least for now, he's still very much called to be a father, and still very much called to that same vocation as married life. As we were saying before, unfortunately, the contingencies of life intervened.
Right. Is there any advice you would give young people, young men and women who are, maybe in the late teens, early to mid 20s, people are postponing getting married now into, 30 plus years old. Any suggestions that you have about someone who's trying to discern their vocation, if it were to include family life?
Yeah, the root, I think people miss what the root of married life is. And I think especially as a young person discerning what you're called to, the thing you have to discern is whether you are called to exclusively give yourself and your life to one physical person, a person that has physical presence here in the world. That's a very different vocation than giving your life to Christ. It's a very different vocation than giving your life to service of the church. You are giving yourself entirely to another person for the purpose of creating yet another person. So you're giving yourself to somebody that can talk back to you, that can argue with you, that you know has very
can love you
exactly, right. and return that love in very physical terms. Mm-hmm. And so I think that that physical manifestation of, are you called to give your life exclusively to another physical person, or are you called to give your life and your love to God or to His church? That's ultimately what you're discerning. And so I think you have to look at your own nature to a certain extent and discern within that calling where you're going to find joy. Are you the type of person that's going to find joy in giving yourself to others that are physically right there, right in front of you, that that need their noses wiped and their meals mm-hmm. prepared and their mm-hmm. food made for them? Or are you the type that can give yourself to somebody else in more spiritual terms? Are you the type of person that's going to give yourself more readily through service, counseling, teaching, preaching, offering God's word, sacraments, those types mm-hmm. of things? How is it that you want to love the world? And I think that's ultimately what you're discerning as you're growing up. It's not so much discerning, do I want kids and do I want a wife, but it's how do I want to give myself to somebody else?
Yeah, that's well said. It made me think a lot about, even though we're talking about family, vocation family, made me, though, think a lot about the Little Sisters of the Poor and what a special vocation those women share in terms of their service, their particular charism and service to the elderly poor to accompany them until the Lord calls them home.
Right, exactly. I mean, that's not to say religious life or even priestly life is going to be absent of that type of physical service to another human being.
Right.
But it's different. You know, it's
married life has a kind of intimacy to it.
Exactly.
That's a little bit different. Yeah,
yeah, it's an intimacy. And then in later life, too, there's a devotion mm-hmm. to one person that you're caring for.
Mm-hmm.
You know, some of the most beautiful married couples are elderly couples where one of them is incapacitated, and
right.
watching that devotion and love and outpouring and total giving of yourself to one other person, it shows itself very differently later in life than it does earlier in life, but it's still part of that married vocation.
Yeah. Well, let's turn the conversation, Mark, to, say, vocations to the priesthood. What are your thoughts there?
Yeah, you know, this is one where it would be great to have a priest in studio with us.
Right up
to a little bit, but yes. we'll have to improvise and
yeah.
You know, and
maybe we can get some feedback on the show.
Yeah,
in case we go off
right.
script.
You know, both of us have said that, you know, both of us took time at some
yeah.
point,
yep.
you know,
yep.
discerning whether there was a calling to priestly life. And, you know, for me, it really boiled down to the sacraments. And that's, I think, ultimately the root of what the priesthood is are you called to offer Christ to others through the sacraments and through being the minister of the sacraments? And when I thought of it in those terms, I came pretty quickly to a no for
okay.
my own self
yeah.
and for my own life. I was like, no, that's not, you know, that idea of being that minister that can bring Christ physically to somebody else and to an entire parish and to the world as the, you know, that person that's standing in the place of Christ to offer Christ on behalf of Christ. Am I called to that? And I think when you're going through that discerning of the vocations, you have to be fairly in tune with your own gut instincts and your own gut check. And, you know, when I did that, I just didn't feel it in my gut. I just didn't feel that sort of a, yeah, that's what I'm called to type of thing. Mm-hmm. But I do think that somebody that is called to the priesthood, that's what they need that gut check for. That's what they need to be discerning is, do I feel like standing in the place of Christ to offer Christ on behalf of Christ to really the church that is Christ in the world? Is that what I'm called to do?
Yeah, without a priest, without priests, we'd have no sacraments, basically. So,
right.
One of the things I think I wanted to share as we're talking about vocation to priesthood is, it's sort of a, I would say sort of, I don't know if it's a common misunderstanding or just maybe lack of familiarity with this notion that priests can really be one of two different kinds of priests in the Catholic Church. One is they can be a diocesan priest, or sometimes that's referred to as a secular priest, who is specifically ordained to be in the service of the local bishop, the ordinary, or they could be a ordained a priest, but also belong to a religious community like the Dominicans, the Jesuits, the Franciscans, the Marians, etc. And one of those big differences is really how they live their lives out. You typically with diocesan priests, they're often either living alone or maybe with one, possibly a second priest there. But in when you join religious communities as a priest or as a consecrated, you're living in community with many. I know, like when I was in formation, there were, let's see, there were six postulants, and I think there were four priests, and so 10 of us were all living together. And that's kind of a full house.
Yeah, that's a full house. So that central priestly vocation of being that person who is offering Christ to the world, how does that look differently within religious community than it would within a parish setting?
Well, for example, we had in the house we were staying in, well, they had two of them next to each other, but every day, Sunday was a little bit different timing wise, but every day we would gather at 5:30 to pray, the office of readings and the morning office out of the breviary. Then at 6 o'clock we gathered in chapel, and in the chapel where we always had the Blessed Sacrament reserved. So that's it. So imagine like the living room, your house though, is a chapel with an altar and all the furnishings of a Catholic church, just small. And then, so then from 6 to 6:30, we would always have meditation. So we'd go before the Blessed Sacrament and you'd sit there quietly. You might bring some spiritual reading, sacred scripture, spiritual book, something like that. 6:30, we would then stop meditation and then take a couple of minutes, prepare for Mass. And so we'd have Mass every day at 6:30. And then at 7, it was breakfast. And then by 7:30, you're off doing whatever you want. If you were in seminary, you went to school. If you had other, whatever your job or occupation was, you ministries, you went and did that kind of stuff. You came back at 12 for the Angelus, lunch. 3 o'clock was Divine Mercy Chaplet. Then 5:30 kind of started again. 5:30 was the we would pray the rosary together, evening prayer. And then also we had a little prayer booklet for the Marians with our own kind of special prayers just for that community. So it was just, you were always together. There was always a handful of us. And so let me pause there because we got to take a break. When we come back, we'll pick up this discussion about vocations to the priesthood.
And you're listening to The Catholic Cave on Catholic Radio Indy.
Here at Catholic Radio Indy, we're celebrating our 15th birthday by throwing a big party. Well, actually, it's our annual dinner, and this year it's Tuesday, October 27th at the Northside Knights of Columbus Hall. Father Douglas Hunter, pastor of St. Rock's Parish and chaplain for the Indianapolis Colts, will be the speaker. It won't be a party without you. Tickets are $65 per person or $450 for a table of eight. The reception and silent auction begin at 6 p.m., dinner at 7. Tickets are available online at catholicradioindy.org.
You can hear the Holy Mass every day at 8 a.m. right here on Catholic Radio Indy.
And welcome back to the Catholic Cave. I'm Mark Tuttle here with Timothy O'Donnell, Kent Blanford, and we are talking today about vocations. And Tim, you were talking a little bit about your own calling to the Order of Marians of the Immaculate Conception.
Yes.
And, the life that was lived there within that. And it's a priestly order, but... Mm-hmm. But honestly, the religious life sounds a lot like religious life in community of any other type of religious order that you mm-hmm. might think of. So really, when you're talking about being a priest within a religious order or just a member of a religious order, what's the difference? I mean, what does being a priest, how does your life differ when you're in a religious order as a priest versus when you're in a religious order as just simply a brother or a sister?
Well, the priests within the religious orders are obviously going to, as you mentioned before, they're going to be the main celebrants of the sacraments. And they're the ones that are going to be celebrating Mass and things of that nature. Within religious communities, each one has their own kind of charism, usually based off of, you're going to find off their founder or founders. So with the Marian Fathers, it was Father Saint, I should say now, Stanislaus Papczynski, who founded them in Poland back in the 1500s. And so you pick up kind of their charism. And their charism, so for the Marians, they're some of their primary apostolates or ministry. They do have a few parishes where they will serve as parish priests. They also, though, have the are the stewards of the National Shrine of Divine Mercy in Stockbridge, Massachusetts. That's a huge place of pilgrimage, plus Divine Mercy Sunday and all that kind of stuff, and the promotion of St. Faustina's diary. They also have do missionary work in the Philippines and various African countries as well. And they have a publishing arm, so they promote that too. So it's a variety of different things, and each order is going to have kind of their, or religious community is going to have kind of their own charism, and then their own kind of apostolates or ministries that you'll be called to serve in, which is going to differ from in a secular priest or diocesan priest is going to be primarily focused on serving the bishop, typically through parish life or some sort of administrative role, like being a canon lawyer or something like that.
Right. So there's, in vocational discernment, then there's not only the discernment towards what charism you're called to, you know, what kind of area of service you're called to as a religious person, if you're called to the religious life. But then within that calling, are you called to the role of a priest within that religious life?
Correct.
And then so, you know, are you called to serve the Lord in religious community, and does part of that involve becoming a priest and being called mm-hmm. to the priesthood to be, you know, Christ within that community or Christ as a member of that community to the outside mm-hmm. world as a missionary or some other role yeah. like that.
Yeah. And just like we talked about religious women's vocations to the consecrated life. There's bright spots certainly now, but generally there's been a big drop off, big decline. Same with men going into the consecrated life as brothers. Typically in the United States, brothers have fulfilled kind of two roles. One, teaching roles. So they would be teachers. A lot of priests would do this too, but brothers would be teachers at various different parochial schools or colleges. But also, there's a lot of things. When you live in community, there's just a lot of different just administrative and other things that need to happen. I know, for example, of a brother down at if he's still there, it's been a few years now, but who's a he's a brother, but he's a monk, Benedictine monk, down at St. Meinrad, but he's a trained nurse, and so part of what he does is, because many of the monks are elderly, his role within his community, in addition to the prayer life that they share in. And living together, is he provides health care to his brother monks.
Yeah. Now, when we talked about marriage, you know, we kind of said, you know, the central calling of marriage is to give your life exclusively to another person, you know, for the purpose of service to the church, certainly, but really mostly service to the family, service to your spouse, and then service to your children, etc. As a priest, you know, we said that the central calling there is to be that person that stands in the place of Christ for the administration of the sacraments, primarily, to be that person that's there in persona Christi, to be Christ to the body of Christ, for the body of Christ, on behalf of the body of Christ. Mm-hmm. You know, that's the central calling of being a priest. What would you say the central calling of somebody who is called to religious life would be?
I would say that as it was explained to me, when you're called, if you are to follow, so with the Marians, they're given a rule, they have an approved rule of life. So in other words, they have, think of it as like a handbook that says, hey, if you embrace our charism and live your life in accord with these principles and these rules, St. Benedict's rule, for example, what's the outcome? It's salvation. In other words, you have assurances that if you live this life this particular way, you have the assurance of salvation. Why? Well, because you are giving yourself, one of the things that makes religious life very different than, say, my secular life is the amount of time in religious life that's spent in prayer is typically a lot more your day is day and night are dedicated to prayer in religious communities than it is in a secular world. Even though I'm single, I have a job I have to go to that takes, 10, 12 hours a day, 5, 6 days a week, all that kind of stuff. Well, in religious life, you have built into your schedule already, your daily routine, time for what? Mass, the breviary, the rosary, Divine Mercy Chaplet, et cetera, et cetera. And so you're just going to be spending a lot more time engaged in more of these explicitly religious type activities.
Because that's where religious life ultimately came from. Mm-hmm. It was people kind of feeling that calling to prayer. And so leaving society to a good extent, going out into the desert. St. Anthony of the Desert is one of my favorite saints. He was one of the first ones that just, he saw the world, he saw the problems within the world, and he said, the remedy to this isn't more activity within the world. Mm-hmm. The remedy to this is praying for the world. And right. So he pulled himself out of the world to be able to pray for the world and engage eventually back in the world through service. Although I'm not sure St. Anthony ever did. He spent his life pretty much in the desert. But, I think ultimately the idea is you withdraw from the world to be able to pray for the world and to serve the world as somebody that is in the world but not of the world. Yeah, and that's ultimately, I think, kind of the central idea of religious life.
And, I think for the longest time growing up, when you thought of religious sisters and the nuns, most of the time we thought of the cloistered nuns who went and, like you said, went and their whole day was prayer and service to the church. Then we had, for example, Sisters of St. Francis that I had in school, and their day was religious prayer, teach in school, then go back to prayer. Mm-hmm. I think one of the things we're seeing, we mentioned earlier that there seems to be an increase of young women taking on vocations. And I think it's because of many of the religious orders that we're seeing today have refocused themselves. They're not so much the coming out of the world. Yes, they do that. But at the same time, they're stepping out into the world. There's a group in New York called the Sisters of Life. And they work with women who are in crisis pregnancies. Mm-hmm. They're out in actually, working with these people on a daily basis, promoting life and, promoting things beyond, what you would see in a classroom. And it's a matter of they've got this new balance that's calling younger women that says, yes, we pray, but we also work.
Yeah, and you do sort of have two types of religious communities. You've got the active religious communities and the contemplative religious communities. And a lot of those contemplative religious communities are also seeing a lot of growth right now as well. I've got a good friend, his daughter joined the Carmelites. Ooh. And they are building, in the process of building, a new Carmel in Pennsylvania, wow. from the ground up. So they've got the foundations laid because they have so many postulants and so many people coming that, they're seeing their community grow and spread, etc. And when you look at the growth, I think, of culture and civilization, a lot of times that's the pattern. You have these contemplative orders going and forming new communities in the desert, in the wilderness. And as they grow and as they pray, they begin to create a new community around them. And that community becomes more and more of a Christian or civilized community as they grow. And I think that's a pattern we're beginning to see in the United States. We're beginning to see these religious communities kind of reform themselves. And as they reform themselves, dedicating their lives to prayer, to the sacraments, to the orderly prayer life that comes from living within religious community, you start to see the community around them grow up and spread in a lot of these areas.
Yeah, we are about out of time, but guys, in the beginning of the show, I ask each one of you, what's your vocation? And Mark, at one point you said, we're going to come back to you. Well, you know what? We just got a minute or two left. I want to tell you, it's taken me a long time to realize it. Yeah, I have this job here where I work at Catholic Radio Indy, and I'm a production manager, I'm a show host, all these other things. And it's only within the past few months that I really realized what my vocation is. I'm an evangelist. I just have this really great public forum that I can use to spread the word. And the thing is, I'm not the only evangelist in the world. Every single baptized Catholic Christian is called to be an evangelist. That's all of our vocations. That's something we can all do on a regular basis. And that's what we do here at Catholic Radio. That's what the Catholic Cave is all about, getting the word out, spreading the gospel. So, for Mark Tuttle, for Timothy O'Donnell, I'm Kent Blanford. Until next time, may God bless.
The Catholic Cave is a production of Catholic Radio Indy. Replays of this program are available in podcast form at catholicradioindy.org. Comments about this program can be addressed to kent@catholicradioindy.org or by calling 317-870-8400.